Happy Saturday, everybody.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Are we off by a day? Are we on the other side of the international dateline?
We're off by a day, but if you are listening to this, you are not. We are recording a day earlier than we normally do because of all of the interesting things that are going on. Interesting things I would love to talk about. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Olvey. You can give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Still our voicemail, toll-free nationwide. More information about why that's still our voicemail later. Joining me today, as usual, is the lovely Becky. How are you?
Lovely, apparently. No, I'm doing great. It's nice to be here, Sam.
Also lovely, Becca. How are you?
Also well.
Yay, hooray. So the reason I were recording on Saturday is because some of us like to be involved in political processes. And we are now at, we are getting ready for, what is this?
This is a county caucus for the Democrats in Washington State,
yeah.
Where the county, the party platforms at the county level are presented, different things like that.
Well, the whole reason I'm mentioning it is because this is my third caucus this year, and
it'll be my third caucus as well.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. And the whole reason 2 weeks ago we were also pre-recorded, were we not? How did we do that?
We did something funny.
Yeah, we did something funny because I was caucusing from noon to 1 a.m. 13 hours at the 27th Legislative District Caucus. I think you might have read something about that if you're politically astute. But
if you were wondering what it's supposed to be like, my caucus was done by 4:30 p.m.
Yeah, that was what I was expecting, having done this sort of thing before. But then I get there and everything was kind of a mess. Usually everybody's like, oh my gosh, it was the volunteers. No, the volunteers were hung out to dry. But man, I mean, this was like the worst political fight I'd been in since I left Chicago. I mean, that's
it was actually kind of fun. Now, Becca, you're in a different legislative district, and we had the Witzman auxiliary arm come and rescue some people with snacks and dinner.
Yes, I came with food and everything for people. I came to the party, essentially.
Yeah, it turned into a little party.
I'm pretty sure you guys maybe at 6 hours were really distraught, but by the time you hit about 10, you're just like, woo. Woo-hoo, we're not even real people anymore.
It was literally a circus. There were performances on stage.
Acrobatics.
Yeah. There was music. There was acrobatics because everybody's like, well, it's 300 million people in a room entertaining ourselves for 13 hours. How do we make this work?
Everyone calmed down eventually, and they were,
eventually, yeah, no riots.
They accepted
everything
their
was
life.
Fine. Yeah.
Some hacky sack playing, some
so if you're
yoga.
If you're wondering how things are going, you can listen to earlier. The earlier episodes of Ask an Atheist, but I'm trying to keep the presidential race kind of low key on the show because while there's definitely a political interface, well, there's definitely certain political, you know, candidates I could tell you how horrible they are and their anti-humanistic stances, like for example, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. But beyond that, I don't really, not really the area for Ask an Atheist, I think.
Did you see what the Satanists had to say about Ted Cruz this week?
Oh, right. Okay, so here's the thing. I have been trying to be called Satan for going on 6 years now. I mean, I run a show about atheists. I dress funny. I've even been in a short film where I played Satan.
You've got the goatee going on.
I got the goatee going on. And then this Ted Cruz guy, merely by just running for president, gets fully usurps me in my quest for the dark throne.
Devil in the flesh, I think is what he was called.
Yeah, it's called that by Boehner. And
Sam, I've got the solution to this.
What's that?
Clearly, we have to have a Sam Mulvey for president campaign.
Aha!
Yeah, a bit late for that, isn't it? A little bit late in the year.
Mean this year's presidency.
Vote for me. I might not destroy the nation. That would be my motto.
Well, I might destroy it a little bit less than the other guy.
Yeah. Possibly not as bad. That would be a motto. So what did the Satanists say?
Well, the Satanists had to say they thought it was very unfair to the Dark Lord. they didn't appreciate the
comparison,
yeah,
that juxtaposition
at all. Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of jokes you could make, like Satan remains static in his beliefs, where Ted Cruz has changed his mind on several topics. I mean, you could take this in many, many strange directions, and it would be pretty amazing. Continuing on our theme of Satan, singer Pat Boone suggested that blasphemers on television should face punishment from the government. The 81-year-old crooner was being interviewed by Ellen Combs when the discussion turned to a recent Saturday Night Live skit skit called God is a Boob Man, which was parodying the film God's Not Dead 2. Boone argued that the FCC should punish Saturday Night Live for committing blasphemy and claimed that 90% of Americans would agree. When Colmes asked what sort of punishment would be fitting, Boone said that the show, or whoever was responsible, should lose its FCC license.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Now, TV shows in themselves do not actually hold FCC licenses, do they?
No, I'm pretty sure you either need to be an operator of machinery or somehow be transmitting signals for the FCC to really care about what you're doing. And that's usually how the licensing works.
That's Pat Boone.
Boone's orbit has been slowly drifting away from planet Earth for, you know, 10 or 20 revolutions now. So
I'm going to have to go look this up, though. God is a Boob Man. I have not seen God is a Boob Man.
I have not either. And at this point, I'm sad to admit that as much as I wanted to see the original, because I really liked it when Kevin Sorbo was in Andromeda, I haven't seen the original God's Not Dead.
We're going to have a watch party.
Nor have I seen the sequel. Yeah, so that would suggest maybe a slog through and do the whole thing all at once. But that sounds inordinately painful.
Now, God's Not Dead 2, the premise is no longer at the university level. We're in K-12 realm here, and I just don't think that Melissa Joan Hart, my childhood, you know, avatar of Clarissa, explains it all. I can bear the pain of now me, grown-up school teacher, seeing her parody, basically. I mean, there's no way that that this couldn't inflame my passions, I guess you might say.
So, wait, the person in this movie is Clarissa Explains It All.
Yes, yeah, Clarissa from Clarissa Darling from Clarissa Explains It All.
So, keeping up this theme of actors and actresses from famous 90s properties who have taken a major Christian turn and then do a movie with them?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. I mean, is the end goal here where I think this is going? It's going to be God's Not Dead Babies featuring Kurt Cameron?
Oh, yeah. Kurt Cameron's in the next one for sure.
That's where we're going here, right?
I couldn't tell yet.
Because nobody's gotten mad at him in a few years because he hasn't said anything completely ridiculous near a microphone. Well, I mean, he might be, but nobody's paying attention anymore. So you kind of need to up the stakes, right?
As long as Justin Timberlake steers clear of any of this business, I'm going to be okay.
Is that where this goes? Is that your biggest fear?
That's my she would cry.
That's my card line. You know,
that's your
90s
card line.
JT with his little frosted tips. I had the Justin Timberlake frosted tips. He cannot violate those frosted tips by being in a God's Not Dead movie.
Rebecca Friedman, 2016.
You heard it here.
Wow. That's a quote for the ages. I'm learning so much about you, Becky. I mean, we're married, but you've never gone on about Justin Timberlake at this length.
You didn't know me in the 90s, Sam.
Apparently, I did not.
So
actually, under the circumstances, that would be a little creepy.
Does 90% of our listenership want to prosecute me for blasphemy for praising Justin Timberlake's frosted tips? Or is that just Pat Boone's fantasy at this point?
I think I wish it were merely Pat Boone's fantasy. But the idea of prosecuting people for blasphemy is a fairly common concept, which we'll get into later in the show. Speaking of which, have I mentioned that the Prime Minister of Turkey is a complete knob?
Oh, have you?
Yeah, he's a bad human being.
Good thing we don't live in Germany or anything.
Yeah. Spoilers, I guess. So I would like to hear opinions on listeners about the God's Not Dead films. Believe it or not, people seem hesitant to talk to me about them.
You know, I think if we could get some people to send an email or a voicemail letting us know whether or not we should watch that, because I fear it. Yeah. I'm afraid to watch it because I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's going to be painful. I don't need to sacrifice 2 hours of my life for that.
But a little bit better news here. An openly atheist candidate has won a Maryland primary, earning himself a nomination for Congress. Maryland State Senator Jamie Raskin won the Democratic nomination for Maryland's heavily left-leaning 8th district and is expected to easily win the general election. Raskin, a constitutional law professor, is a member of the American Humanist Association and open about his atheism and his humanism. During a Maryland Senate hearing on same-sex marriage in 2006, Raskin said that lawmakers place their hand on the Bible and swear to uphold the Constitution. They don't put their hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible. If he wins, Raskin will be the first openly atheist candidate to win an open seat in Congress.
What a soundbite, that swearing in kind of thing. I mean, that I remember when
more,
it happened.
Please.
And
yes,
that was just awesome. That was just awesome. Now, it would be cool if you could place your hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Constitution either way. You could just get the Bible
yeah,
all out
exactly
of it.
What I thought.
I always
kind of
wonder what happens if there's like a swearing in ceremony and you, no thank you, Bible. Do you just sort of twiddle your thumbs or do you do
a... There have been a few...
Chicken dance?
You don't have a chicken dance, but sometimes you just raise your hand. You know, you raise your hand and take an oath.
No. Wouldn't that be great?
No, it wouldn't. That's more fitting for a Kevin Sorbo movie, I guess.
Becky. Well played.
So,
what do they do? I'm in all seriousness.
You can elect to have whatever your particular. I think there are candidates of the Jewish faith that have not sworn in on a Christian Bible with a New Testament, but on five books of Moses.
If you've got a book, then substitute your favorite book here. But I don't. I mean. Are atheists going to swear in on Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire? I mean, what's the...
I think that there have been folks that maybe haven't been atheist like
Jamie
Raskin.
That's actually a Harry Potter book, right?
It is a Harry Potter book.
Okay,
yeah, Goblet
great.
Of Fire, yeah, fourth one, right? I think so. There have been there have been elected officials that upon their swearing in have just raised their hand to say that they will be taking an oath to uphold this. I believe, and our listenership can verify this and I guess chew me out via email, but there have been some folks that have used either the Constitution or a different book that was completely non-religious upon which they can be sworn in.
Using the Constitution or some other foundational document for the United States seems to make a fair bit of sense. I'd have to really think about that one, about how that would play out, because there's still something about that in the back of my head.
I don't understand why you have to swear something against something else. Can't you just, on my honor?
Yeah.
On my honor, I swear. Because I don't know if the document's really meaningful. Let me externally let people know that I feel
I should think the Constitution is meaningful if you're a politician. I mean, that's kind of the hope, right?
Okay.
If there's going to be some document I'd like them to pay attention to.
Yes. I'm just arguing there should be no document. Why document?
I think I'm with you. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, finally, somebody going after churches for violating tax laws and fun stuff like that.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-Free Football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And when we were going into the break, Becky, if you can help me out with this, it says Jamie Raskin will be the first openly atheist candidate to win an open seat in Congress. Didn't we have somebody in California?
Yeah,
Pete Stark,
so
I believe his name was.
Pete Stark was... an atheist in California.
I'm pretty sure he still is.
Yes, he is an atheist, but he is no longer in Congress in California. So he is an open atheist. So this is winning an open seat as an open atheist. This is an open seat as opposed to being a congressional representative, then saying, yes, it's true, I'm an atheist, and then being reelected to your current seat that you're in. It's different from being appointed to a seat. This is, no, the people are okay with you being a humanist or an atheist, and electing you as a representative of the people.
That's a big deal. I mean,
it is a huge deal.
Yes. Yeah.
Becky, it's a huge deal.
It's a huge deal.
Right. Well, this is important, and if we're going to have if we're going to make the case for our seat at the table at the at political discussions like we are doing in 2016, it's going to be necessary to show people that atheists in politics can work. And there's some other news coming forward, which I'm looking forward to talking with you guys about. Atheism and politics don't normally mix well in the United States, and this is absolutely something that needs to change. And it's always been something of a focus of mine, even though I'm about as electable as a communicable disease. I mean, yeah, you hear about me, but you don't really want me. Really, nothing? Nothing?
Nothing. I got nothing on that, Sam.
Okay, all right.
Nope, staying silent. Mum's the word.
Fair enough. I have an...
You can do it, Sam. Go for it.
Speaking of awkward moments, I have an email from Sam from the internet. I swear it's not me, even though it begins with an if and def written in C. I may need to include it in the show notes so that you can see this. Hey, so you've mentioned several times that everything you do to keep the show running is open source. Is there code on GitHub? What's the down low on how I can pretend my programming skills are relevant enough to be helpful? Double trouble, entendre, short circuit, semicolon. I was kind of happy to get that. And my answer to that is the code is not yet on GitHub. Whoop, is that?
I was going to say that's definitely written to you because I can barely understand it.
Yeah, Sam, usually I interpret any of our Spanish language questions that come in from listeners, but I think you got to be doing some interpretation and translation here.
It's a parser. It's a parser, if not defined, macro.
So a parsley and a salad.
Good. You just gave me a bunch of jargon.
Okay, it's the first step in turning source code into a program.
Aha!
It goes through a macro parser, and I think that's step one. I don't know. I've never actually written a compiler. This is like if question isn't defined, here's what the question is, and then it's a variable, double variable, which means many many bits can define a large number, and then he names them. It's like literally just a bunch of programming jokes.
So this is talking about sort of a call or an answer to my call of help Sam out with some things, right?
Yeah.
Because you basically have been in charge of so much of this. It's not just keeping the show running with production things, but what goes into production, it's a lot of customizing some software in order to do what we needed to do.
This is going to be a very... I'll do this quickly as possible, given that there's probably a small segment of our listenership who's going to actually care about this. But I have not actually posted any GitHub code on GitHub yet. That is going to change probably in the next few in the next few months as I start wrapping some stuff up right now. You'll be surprised that a lot of the code I've written, I've actually written for NWJS, which means it's almost entirely written for reasons not only having to do with the fact that I'm primarily a web developer and I'm kind of always terrified of my own C. I've written in it in a platform that uses basically web programming technologies to operate certain things. So that's going to all go on GitHub. And the part of the reason I chose that is because if you're a podcaster, the programming languages you're most likely going to know are HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So wouldn't it be nice if podcasters could bang on their own programs and make them do what they want if they don't already? That was kind of my thinking. Also lazy. Faster prototyping, that sort of thing.
So this thing called GitHub here and open source, it's basically just, hey, can we have a library that people can access, use, customize, sharing of information, being really, you know, open and collaborative. And so, Sam, the extent of your willingness to be open, collaborative, and community building goes beyond humanism and atheism and into the world of technology.
I'll be honest with you, humanism and the open source technology thing kind of dovetail for me pretty significantly. Always have.
See? You aren't a communicable disease. I was building the story for why you're awesome, Sam.
Okay. There's a lot of fun projects going on. I recently started a Hackaday.io project regarding some studio projects that I'm working on. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. But the reason I'm talking about all of this is because I'm getting a lot of email and a lot of requests, and I just want to kind of do a quick state of the thing. So, Becky, you made a plea during our clip show about getting new equipment for the studio and the work I put in and stuff like that.
Yeah, usually our listener Peggy has challenged people to donate and contribute to our show in order to pay for our production costs. You know, advertising only pays for a portion of it, and usually it's for airtime that we're spending our money, but we really need some capital investments in equipment that allows Sam to do things a little bit more robustly than sealing wax and nailing twine.
Well, I'm happy to report that even though we have no one meeting Peggy's challenge this week, a lot of people really stepped up last week in a big way. People I thanked last week, and unfortunately don't have a list in front of me. I now have the new equipment that's going to make my life a little bit easier, and I'm still working on getting it into the studio.
Woo-hoo!
So that's step one. Step two is getting some of my other responsibilities taken care of. Step three is, yes, I'm doing a Patreon eventually. The Patreon is coming. Please stop asking. I thank you for asking. I mean, really, thank you. I'm actually surprised that people are asking me about this, because it's like,
Sam, make me let yeah, me give you
I'm gonna,
money.
I'm gonna get a little Sally Field about this. You like me. You really, really like me.
Yes.
It requires me to do a few things, so it's on my list of things to do, and there's some really important stuff between here and there that I gotta get through. So if you'd like to help us keep the lights on, you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Click the yellow button on the right hand side, and it'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping the lights on and keeping the show going. Now, with that out of the way, Puerto Rican officials have announced their intentions to target churches that abuse their tax-free status. Puerto Rican Secretary of the Treasury, Juan Zaragoza, did I get that right, Becky?
Yes, indeed.
Announced the new program, stating that there are a number of for-profit churches that shouldn't be tax-exempt. One local church leader said that while there were some churches acting as merchants of the temple, Zaragoza just wanted to get his slice. Zaragoza responded that he isn't trying to give privilege to anyone, but that some groups who have benefited from the government's previous inaction would see it as being targeted. Zaragoza says that he oversees everyone.
Okay, so initially that "I oversee everyone" can sound a little bit creepy, right? But here's what we're talking about. It's that, no, as a Secretary of the Treasury in a secular state of Puerto Rico, you are overseeing the financial transactions of everyone under your authority and under your auspices. And just because you deem to call yourself a church doesn't give you a free pass to never be subject to auditing. And when you are looking at Puerto Rico, which has been in dire financial straits, then you're looking at, hey, maybe there's a source of revenue that we've been overlooking. And when you have people that, you know, are that, quote, merchants of the temple, you know, we're looking at people that are maybe acting a little bit unscrupulously and saying, oh, we're running a family business, but I'm going to stick a church tag out front and say we're a church, don't audit me, then you know, maybe it's worth that you come under scrutiny.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. You know, I actually have a problem in general with the whole tax-exempt churches and everything like that. You know, I generally feel like this is a source of revenue that isn't taken advantage of
right.
In general. So it's nice to see that they're at least trying to go after the ones that are even following the rules in general. Because, I mean, if they've gotten to the point where they're just like they're literally making a profit and they're organized that way, it's good that they're cracking down on this, especially in Puerto Rico.
I really have problems with the tax exempt status of churches because it has been so widely abused, much like crucifixes on state symbols and in God We Trust on the wall in office buildings, in a world where people were playing fair and not trying to get one over on people. Yeah, okay, I might be okay with it. If it's there to serve its community, its congregation, then maybe taxes aren't the right. Taxing that maybe isn't such a great idea. I mean, I work for several nonprofits. And they aren't taxed either. On the other hand, you've got Oh, historically, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. In modern times, you've got Joel Osteen. You've got...
Joel Osteen-tatious, you mean?
Yes. You've got all of these people who are collecting millions and millions and millions of dollars. Peter Popoff is still doing his thing, even though he was hideously just ground into the dirt, discredited years ago by somebody we've interviewed on the show, James Randi. That was, hey. And they have private planes. They have these huge mansions. They have enormous.
Is there any truth to the golden toilet?
No, that was me.
Oh,
that was all me. I'm pretty sure.
Wait, you have a golden toilet? Is there a secret toilet room that where there's a water closet and they ask maybe a studio?
I have a golden toilet. No, I think I'm the one who said that one of them has a golden toilet. That's a reference elsewhere.
They may as well though.
Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite posts that I ever wrote when we were active with the Ask an Atheist blog had I wrote no words. It was just a series of pictures about. Pictures of his properties with the headline, which is some, it may have been Joel Osteen, I don't remember who it was, but he's like, I'm short $1.5 million. And it's just pictures of all the properties that they own.
The plane, the private jet.
Yeah. And the fact that that this particular preacher raised it in one show, like $1.5 million.
There you go.
Yeah.
Woe that we could raise $1.5 million to cover our short costs. Or the state of Puerto Rico could raise revenue, you know, of $1.5 million to cover their shortfall in their tax revenue. I mean...
This is the... You've got actual people who are religious who aren't, you know, using the system in this way, who aren't abusing the system. They exist. I'm not going to pretend they don't. But when you have this level of abuse and you have this huge, enormous lack of oversight over these things by the IRS for fear of targeting religions and getting a huge backlash, that puts us in a fairly poor position. And it hits places like Puerto Rico, who are having huge financial issues, doubly hard.
It also hits really hard when you have Puerto Rico that is known for, in the last 5 years, religious traffic stops, for instance. You have this entanglement. We've done shows in the past where we've had an entanglement of religious people, of both evangelical churches and the Catholic Church, saying, no, we're going to remove anything about gender theory from our curriculum because that's anti-God. That's against the way that the Lord made people, and that has no business being in public school. I mean, acknowledging that there's gender inequality. And so just one thing, I'm not surprised that Saragossa is getting this backlash when he says, you know, OK, I think, you know, that when people say that he's persecuting, you know, religious organizations and a few bad apples shouldn't have to spoil the whole barrel. But good on Saragossa for being firm and staying strong, because there's no place for this.
Well, and speaking up for himself, because, you know, the thing that they're saying is that he just wants his slice of the pie. But I mean, he's removed from the situation almost completely. Like, it's not like he's going to get money from it.
It's not like he's pocketing the money.
Right. No, yeah. No.
This is no Sheriff of Nottingham collecting taxes going on.
Yeah, it doesn't go to him. It goes into the state. And so, yeah.
I think that's an important thing here. But if they make it sound like he's in it on a for-profit basis, not unlike a certain Joel Osteen, then it's just, yeah. Please don't challenge us as we abuse things is basically what this sounds like to me. So I've been known on the show to say bad things about Tennessee a lot. I decided that was the one thing I wasn't going to apologize for. So, all right, so I think I'm going to continue on that, if that's okay with you guys. I'm just going to be kind of a jerk about Tennessee. Is that cool with you?
Go ahead, Sam.
The Tennessee House failed to overturn a recent veto by Governor Bill Haslam, putting an end to an attempt to make the Bible the state book. House Bill 615, which would have made Tennessee the first state to have the Bible as their state book, was passed by the state legislature by a close margin. Governor Haslam vetoed the bill, saying that it's not only unconstitutional, but also trivializes the Bible. Tennessee law only requires a simple majority to overturn the governor's veto, but failed to get the 50 votes needed in the 99-member House.
Sam, you're really not going to say that this is a good, you know, point, a good turn of direction for Tennessee?
No, this is terrible.
No, this is actually really cool.
Yes, hooray!
Oh, No, this is pretty great.
In your face, Sam.
I actually really like the way this works out. I do have to admit, I love the argument that not only is this bad government, but it's bad for religion. This is just a bad idea all around.
That's channeling Teddy Roosevelt right there, who himself was a religious man, but very much a secularist that said, stop trying to put God on the money because, you know, that trivializes God, that makes God interlinked with commerce.
What I do like about this, and the whole reason we have the separation of church and state in the United States, is once you start talking about religion and trying to link religion to government, questions that otherwise wouldn't arise start happening. Like, who's more of a patriot? Lutherans or Catholics? Which concept of Jesus is the proper Jesus? When you start having, like, your state book be the Bible, these are questions that the government may get involved with, which by their very definition, cut people out of the political process and say your opinion is more valuable than the opinions of other people because you're on the right side of this debate, which the government really should have nothing to do with. It has nothing to do with governing people who have freedom of choice and freedom of belief.
I actually heard the governor being interviewed, and it was quite nice to hear him with this thing that says, you know, this trivializes the Bible. What he was saying is, look, if you believe that the Bible is the word of God, the inerrant word of God, then don't try and make it the state book. His big argument was don't try and sneak in the Bible under the auspices of its historical value. His whole gripe was with some of his lawmakers in his state that he oversees saying, oh, no, 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 this is nothing to do with God's word being inerrant and 100% true. This, we're just trying to do this to acknowledge it for its historical value. And the governor said, I can see right through that.
I was wondering what trivializes the Bible meant to him. But now, yeah, okay, now I can understand. That quote was very strange to me. I was like, how is it trivializing it to, you know, lift it up and put it on a pedestal? But yeah, that definitely.
Well, that's because we're used to the general arguments from other states, like, say, Oklahoma, for instance, where they think the best thing they could do for the Bible is make it the most important book, law,
statue,
ice cream, statue,
right.
Ice cream topping.
Billboards everywhere.
Yeah, billboards everywhere in the state, and that somehow makes Oklahoma more better.
Oddly enough, it avoided the toilet paper designation. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
What?
No, that, one in Oklahoma.
That was an odd direction for you to. That was out of left field for me. I mean, well done, well played. Don't get me wrong, but that was a bit of a surprise. I kind of liked it.
But it's kind of surprising from Tennessee to hear this turn. And not only the governor saying, all right, guys, rein it in. Seriously, don't try and say it's good for its historical value when you really are just trying to say it's 100% true. But here's the thing. It's not that he just vetoed it. It's that when it went back, the measure failed to get the 50 votes needed in the 99-member House. 50 votes they couldn't even amass to say, yes, we're going to push it through over the wishes of this governor.
Well, I think what might have happened there is they passed it because they figured to not pass it, that a lot of people were thinking to not pass it, is to say that I don't like Christians. And that is a difficult position for a politician to take in the United States. But then when the governor said, yeah, this is dumb for a number of reasons that have nothing to do with how much I like Christians, that gave the legislature enough backbone to say, yeah, you know what? Never mind. This is a bad idea.
Well,
and you know what? Joking aside, I'm not placing this on. I'm not going to say this is surprising from or it's merely surprising just from Tennessee that this got vetoed. A lot of states in the union, I think I would be surprised by if this got vetoed. I would say a majority of them. And I would even challenge, in some situations, especially with the Eastern-Western divide in Washington, how that would play out here.
I don't know. Has anyone ever tried in Washington to get the Bible to be our state book? Do we have a state book in Washington? Maybe there's already a state book in Washington, and that's why no one's tried so far. I mean, we've got state muffins, state coffees, state all different kinds of things like that.
Yeah, I would. Like I said, I couldn't tell you, but I'd need to see how it would work out. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to do a break, and when we come back, we are going to continue on this subject, and then start get a little bit to world affairs after national affairs, I suppose.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanistsofwashington.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And continuing on my theme of Tennessee and the problems that I have with it, I have yet another news story. The Tennessee House approved a bill that repeals an exemption in child neglect and abuse laws for faith healing. Senate Bill 1761 was passed unanimously by the Senate and 85-1 by the House, and is expected to be signed by Governor Haslam. The original legislation passed in 1994 protected parents from abuse or neglect charges if they provided treatment by spiritual means through prayer alone in accordance with the tenets or practices of a recognized church or religious denomination. The Tennessee Supreme Court recently upheld the exemption, saying it wasn't vague enough to be unconstitutional.
I don't know what vague enough to be unconstitutional might mean, but hooray for this. I mean, this is a real win for children who cannot protect themselves from their parents' ridiculous thoughts that are going on in their head. They're like, you know what we're going to heal it with? Our minds.
Yeah.
We're going to use our minds.
This vague unconstitutionality actually stems from a case where a woman was tried and convicted for harm done to her child because she brought her child, who was suffering from, I believe, Ewing sarcoma, to a faith healer. But the faith healer was not affiliated with any recognized denomination or recognized church. And so she did not qualify for exemption under that particular law. And at that point, when a woman couldn't be, you know, protected under the faith healing law and was convicted for harm to her child, the legislature got its act together and said, you know what, this is a bad law in the first place.
You know, it's very interesting that giving somebody a piece of paper suddenly makes their mind capable of healing other people. It's just like, you know, like, oh, she wasn't approved by the state to have magical mind powers.
You know, what the hell? Yeah, I didn't know the legislature ran a wizard school.
Yeah, no, they apparently know which ones can have magic powers. Yay.
Yeah.
You know, I actually saw something about this in the news recently, where there was a girl who's permanently disabled, and it's due to her parents going with faith healing whenever she was younger, and she wants to sue her parents now that she's an adult because she's permanently disabled and she knows it's their fault. And I hope she wins. That would be wonderful.
I think I would like to see that too. I mean, that's always kind of a bit of a sticky thing. But okay, so you know what? I talked about how it might be unlikely for Washington State to pass the Bible as the state book. But faith healing exemptions, I know Oregon has them. I think we have them too.
I'm pretty sure we do.
It was actually, so right now locally with Oregon and Washington, Oregon has tightened up their laws on it. Washington does have tight laws on it, with the exception of something we've covered in the past, which is personal belief and personal convictions against vaccinating your children. But in terms of the Pacific Northwest, we have to move a little bit further inland to really get to the crux of it, where Idaho has very lax laws. laws for parenting and allows people to basically neglect their children to death. And there have been some very extreme religious groups that have gone from Eastern Washington and Eastern Oregon and moved over into Idaho. And that's an ongoing thing that a lot of secular groups have been, you know, having their eye on and trying to pressure the Idaho state legislature to pass something as intelligent as Tennessee has just done.
Wow. Wow. It's interesting that, Tennessee is leaps and bounds ahead of Idaho.
Yeah. So this is, I guess, my other... Oh, moment.
No, right. Yeah. In your face, Sam.
Yeah.
Tennessee is fine. Look at them leading the charge.
I admit failure. I admit being on the wrong side of this conversation.
Something which you, as someone who doesn't believe in absolute truth of the Lord above, is, you know, okay with doing occasionally, right?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I'm okay with this.
You mean you're not God?
Right. Oh, let's not start that one. Moving farther afield, a woman who was elected to Iran's parliament in February could lose her seat for shaking hands with a man. The Guardian Council, an unelected group of clerics and religious judges who approve all candidates, decided to rescind their endorsement of Manu Kalegi despite the fact that her election had already been ratified. MP Ali Motahari argues that the council is setting a dangerous precedent by attempting to disqualify a candidate who has already been elected. Motahari claims that it would be hard to prove that Kalegi shook hands with a man, which is illegal under Iranian law, and even if she did, it would be acceptable if she was wearing gloves.
So I have run into this before in real life, in my life, where I was working for some Turkish men, and they did not like that I wore clothes that fit my body, and they wanted me to wear this extra large t-shirt, and I was like, it doesn't fit. I'm wearing a dress. This is back whenever I was in high school. I weighed like 88 pounds. An extra large shirt was like a dress on me. And I was complaining a lot about it. And they said, you know, I get turned on by a woman's ankle. I, you know, just the brush of the skin of a woman. That is enough for me. And I was like, well, that sounds like a personal problem or whatever. But
you're creepy.
Right. Well, it did feel kind of creepy that it's like, you have to wear this giant dress because if I just see you wearing clothes that fit, it's too much. And I feel like it's coming from a similar place in that this is about a woman's touch and the way they view it as sexuality. And everything, but you know, then you have this woman who is being discriminated against, and she can't even be touched and have a handshake like
other human beings,
like she's human,
right?
Yeah. Becca, I like your high school story. I'm actually going to go a little bit further back to middle school. So, Sam, something you make fun of me for is that in sixth grade, it was traditional in my town to take ballroom dancing and etiquette lessons. So, yes, in my barbarian hinterlands, as you are apt to describe them,
right?
I did, in fact, take etiquette and ballroom dancing lessons, and it's for like, you know, 9 weeks or something in sixth grade. As sixth graders, we all got to, whatever, wear little white gloves and little dresses. And I'm sure our parents thought we were all darling, because we probably were. And our justification for it as 11-year-old little girls was, well, at least we get to wear the gloves so that we don't have to touch the icky boys. So I'm going to take the, what is this called? The Guardian Council? This is a special cabal of...
Robots in disguise.
Seriously. These are clerics and religious judges who have to, before elections, say, nope, you're qualified to run, you're not qualified to run, you're qualified to run, you're not qualified to run. They have the mindset of giggly 11-year-old sixth grade girls saying, you know, that it's too icky to touch people, but it's okay if you're wearing gloves because that offers you protection. Yeah.
So I have no story like this. I wonder why that is.
No, that's strange, Sam.
Wow, this is a huge surprise, right? No, I never understand the thinking of...
No one's ever told you needed to wear gloves to keep yourself from touching others.
Well,
Sam, you're so immodest.
Yeah, well, okay, you know, I've been told that I must wear gloves because otherwise I'll burn my skin off. That's about as far as that goes.
Oh, for like actual protection and safety?
Yeah, for like real actual protection from chemicals and stuff.
You're working with electrical components? You need to wear lineman's gloves?
I have been told to wear pants.
Those kneecaps, Sam. I'm just all a Twitter.
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
I'm not pretending it's the same thing. I never understand the I have these problems with dealing with other human beings, therefore everybody else must dress accordingly.
Well, and they're not saying this to any of the men about their handshakes, because apparently it's not sexual for a man to shake hands with a man, but the moment you touch a lady's hand,
goodness. There's no gay people elected in Iran ever. They probably don't even exist in Iran.
That's a little scarier than it... Yeah, that's funny and more scary. I know. But
what's scary also is that you have a group of religious folks that are trying to say, oh, we're going to travel in time and unapprove her approval. She's already been elected.
That's not a slippery slope of any kind.
So
it's not, they don't care. I mean, this is Iran. It's a theocracy. They have secret beliefs.
The only reason why this is an issue at all is because it's a theocracy, and so they have this gender based laws coming into play that completely discriminate against women. So
yeah, absolutely, it's ridiculous, and this is unlike bathrooms, the whole bathroom thing, which is like literally it's just a world. That, like, if I see another human, like, if I resolve another human being in my vision while I'm going to a public restroom, I've already failed the restroom test. This is not a thing I care about. Where this is something I hear and see a lot in the news and just walking around, but it's another one. It's like, why would you do this to other people because you suck? I don't get it. And it stinks. And, however... sort of another story regarding this that I think might give us a surprising take, actually. The Swiss Teachers Union has announced their objection to two Muslim boys being exempted from shaking their teachers' hands. The two boys from the town of Thurwil, 14 and 15 years old, have lived in Switzerland for a number of years and complained that shaking hands with their female teachers violated their religious beliefs. The Thurwil mayor told reporters townspeople are unhappy with the situation. One critic said that the school made a mistake in attempting to get an unpleasant problem out of the way.
So this is that in Switzerland, in this particular town, and generally in Swiss culture, I have come to understand, it is traditional upon entering your classroom or entering the school in the morning to greet your teacher by shaking hands. Now, I will say, as a Spanish teacher, buenos dias, and, you know, I'll kind of keep pestering the kids until they respond back to me in Spanish because I'm getting them to, you know, use the language. And we have those sort of greeting and seeing each other rituals. In Switzerland, it means that you got to shake hands.
For me, I honestly think I might side with the boys on this. If it makes them uncomfortable to be touched, I think it's as a consent-based thing. And if it makes them uncomfortable, I don't think that they should be forced to shake anyone's hand. And I mean, I understand that the reasons behind it might be religious or whatever, but whenever it comes down to your body, I think that you get to make your decisions for yourself. And forcing them to have to touch somebody against their will whenever they don't want to and it makes them uncomfortable, they might view it as sexual in their mind. I mean, I just think that it's wrong.
This is sort of the other side of the thing we were talking about in the last story to me, is with your t-shirt story, which surprised me. Amazing. Wow. I have this problem with, you know, I have this cultural problem or I have this personal problem. Therefore, I need you to do something. Where in this case, I have this objection. I have this cultural or personal problem. Therefore, I am not going to touch you. That seems to be more of a personal autonomy thing. That's pointed where it belongs, where it's you're practicing self-control and not making other human beings responsible for your cultural values.
I mean, the Turkish men, if their women wanted to wear giant shirts and everything, that's their choice. But I was the one making the decision for my own body. I think it's the same for these boys in this case, is that they're making the decision for their own body and they should be able to do that regardless of where their beliefs are coming from.
I'm also looking at this as a teacher who teaches recent immigrant students from many different backgrounds, and that acculturation and knowing the schooling systems is something that is very valuable for a newcomer. Teenage years is really, really critical. And at the same time, though, we are cognizant of people's upbringings, of the sometimes trauma associated with moving and culture shock. And a lot of people are coming in as refugees and being cognizant of that. And so the initial exemption of saying, you know what, this is just a little bit too much right now to shake teachers' hands. It's not, you know, there's other ways that we can instill respect and establish routine in our school for newcomer students, integrate them in our particular classroom and general Swiss society and Swiss culture, I think was the right call. I'm not going to make every single student do every single thing the same way, and I'm certainly not going to punish the kids. And you know what? If townspeople of my town where I taught students and I said, yeah, I let my students, eat their particular breakfast in my school because whatever was served in the cafeteria didn't meet their particular, dietary requirements or just what they were comfortable with eating. So I bended a little bit of the rules and let kids eat in my classroom. And people in my town were upset with me and saying that my kids are not acclimating to our United States culture, I would defend those kids and I would defend that exemption of the rule because it's about meeting students where they are, helping them be comfortable in a learning environment at the same time of pushing those little, places of discomfort. So I'm inclined to side with the boys in this case as well.
I have nothing as erudite to say as either of you have just spoken, but I always sort of the thing that occurred to me, which this is maybe me judging Swiss culture, and I'll just say that I don't know what this means, but I don't like the concept of enforcing respect for my teacher. If it's enforced respect, it's not respect, it's obeisance. And I don't like that. I don't know that this.
No,
is a good
I'm with you on that. It's really funny as a mother of a 4-year-old. It's very interesting whenever I'm introducing him to adults because I have a tendency to just introduce him to adults, giving the adult's name. This is Becky. I don't say this is Miss Becky, but it's kind of like I want him to feel like he's also human, and it's not like he's not on the same level as Becky as a human being. Instead of this, like Becky here, you down here, and I feel like there's a lot of that goes on whenever it comes to ages,
right.
And I feel like that respect thing, the me here, you lower, often shows up whenever you have adults around children.
Sam, I would challenge your self-reflective assessment of your own erudition. And I would say, yeah, as much as I would love to be instantaneously respected by every student that walks into my room,
right.
I know that I can't earn that, so to speak, by saying, you must do this. That isn't earned respect.
I think there should be an expectation of, lack of disruption, that the classroom environment is for a very specific purpose and you're there for a very specific reason, and doing things that get in the way of that is a problem. But when you take it farther and say that you must respect or you must act in this way to people, that touches on a value that I don't hold. I don't believe respect is a thing that can
you,
be commanded
you,
like
you
that.
You build respect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Through trust and...
I understand that historically and traditionally, that in almost every culture, everywhere, ever.
Honor thy father and mother.
Yeah, that has never been true, but that would be... But that is my cultural values. I don't demand respect. I try to earn respect. I respect, I demand to have rights because I'm a human and we have human rights, but that's not the same thing as saying you must respect me or you must respect my position. And that's not something I'm really asking for.
I think what you really hit the nail on the head, Sam, when you said that's not respect, that's obeisance. When you're looking at just merely obeying or fearing, that isn't respect. And it isn't building of culture. You can build a culture through fear. You can.
Right.
It results in a culture of fear. And I'm not inclined to do that as an educator or as a participant in society.
Right. But again, I feel like I'm in this weird position of saying that I'm judging Swiss culture here. And that's, I don't know the full context. So I'm obviously making observations based off of my incomplete lens of the situation. So if you're in Switzerland and you're listening to this and you want to call me a knob, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the red button, take you right to our page. Please, in detail, tell me why I'm wrong. Much like last week, I was told that I got Norway completely wrong, did I not?
Yeah, I think we have some things down the pipeline about Norway. Should be kind of good about that.
It's a weird thing being doing an atheist talk show like this, an atheist radio show. It's like sometimes if sort of a running theme for the show where we go, yeah, we're going to get this in the neck if we get this wrong, because that's kind of how it works. If we mess up on something, which we do, we hear about it. And this is not me complaining about it. This is me kind of loving it. I talk like this, but this is me getting educated on something I didn't know before. So, you know, I'm not trying to be like other talk show hosts where my word is the law.
I know everything about Switzerland and exactly how they feel as a cultural.
The economy is going to crash in the next 8 months. By the way, would you like to buy some gold from me? You know, I'm not that kind of talk show guy. I like the fact that through the 300 some episodes of the show that we've done, I've learned so much, and I kind of like that.
That back and forth dialogue is so essential and important.
It absolutely is. And unfortunately, that back and forth dialogue is going to have to end for this weekend. Thank you guys very much. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Becca.
Thank you, Sam.
You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, voicemail us at 844-753-7842. Working on the studio, that's going to be a live number soon. You can Twitter us at AskAnAtheistWA. Please, tell me what I get wrong. I love it. See you guys next week.